Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. Today we'll talk some more about the pending U.S. attack on Syria. With a little help from commentators Eric Margolis and Bruce Dixon, from legal expert Marjorie Cohen, and from Pete Seeger. I hope you'll stay tuned. As I'm recording this, President Obama seems to be banging the Syria war drums just a little softer than a week ago. But Syria and Iran are now the only countries in the Middle East that are not largely U.S. puppets. So the Washington war machine continues its work to destroy both. But an immediate military assault on Syria is not playing well in the opinion polls. We're still marching off to war, all right, if at a slightly slower pace now. I don't recommend breathing a sigh of relief just yet. A slower pace is not an about-face. So let's talk some more about Syria. And that topic includes President Obama, the death of the Nuremberg Principles, the death of the U.S. Constitution, and the total failure of the United Nations to prevent any nation from attacking any other nation. What can I say, but they seemed like good ideas at the time. Three of the four of them seemed like good ideas at the time. The Constitution, the Nuremberg Principles, and the United Nations. As for the fourth, Obama, the staff of New World Notes gets no pleasure in saying, "We told you so," but, well, we told you so. I take that back. The Obama administration has been much, much worse than even I predicted. If I may speak plainly, they are total servants of the military-industrial complex, strong-arm men for Wall Street, persecutors of all whistleblowers, and staunch opponents of civil liberties and the Bill of Rights. Do you remember Obama's first term? Most American liberals kept saying, "Oh, Obama is too willing to compromise with the Republicans. Obama is a fine liberal, just like us, but he has a character flaw. He's too reluctant to fight back against the evil Republicans. He lets the Republicans push him around. I wish Obama would stand up more for what he really believes." How many times did you hear people say that? It was nonsense back in 2009, and it's nonsense still. From the start, Obama filled his cabinet with Wall Street tycoons, and he filled his cabinet with old war hawks. War hawks who all supported and even aided Bush's Iraq invasion. Appointing a cabinet like that should show exactly where Obama's head is at. As a young veteran, John Kerry famously condemned the Vietnam War. That was back when he was still a nobody. But opposition to war is a bad career move for a professional politician. The corporate campaign contributions kind of dry up. In recent decades, Kerry has been as bad a war hawk as anyone. Now, as Secretary of State, he's out drumming up support for a war that is every bit as indefensible and illegal as the Vietnam War was, the war he so rightly condemned way back when. In some ways, the U.S. aggression against Syria that Kerry and Obama are pushing is nearly unprecedented. Or rather, their public justification of the aggression is unprecedented. To explain, here is the second paragraph of a page one news article in the New York Times, September 9. It reads, "The proposed strike is unlike anything that has come before. An attack inside the territory of a sovereign country, without its consent, without a self-defense rationale, and without the authorization of the United Nations Security Council, or even the participation of a multilateral treaty alliance, like NATO, and for the purpose of punishing an alleged war crime that is already over, rather than preventing an imminent disaster." End of quote. In other words, the fig leaf covering this naked aggression is even tinier and more transparent than the fig leaves that covered our naked aggression in Libya, Iraq, Somalia, Haiti, Panama, Grenada, you name it. So what the heck is going on, and why? For one explanation, let's hear from Bruce Dixon of Black Agenda Report. His short talk is titled, Does President Obama Want to Turn Syria into Somalia? Maybe. Here is Bruce Dixon.
Presidents say lots of stuff we simply cannot take seriously. Anything about peace, jobs, human rights, or protecting the middle class, just to name a few, is pretty much bound to be nonsense and lies. Examples abound. But when presidents tell us up front they intend to break the law, they just about always do. So we really should believe them. President Obama says that although he'll consult with Congress first this time, as president, he can and will bomb Syria or any place else he likes without the Congressional Declaration of War that Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution requires. In other words, the president, a former constitutional law professor, reserves the right to violate the Constitution and to wage illegal war at his own discretion. The president's war violates international standards as well. Under international law, the only justifiable wars are in response to an attack or with the authorization of the UN Security Council. Syria certainly has not attacked the U.S., and since the White House will not share its supposed evidence of Syrian government attacks on civilians with international inspectors hired by the UN, everybody is just supposed to take Uncle Sam's word for it, pretty much like they had to about Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. Look how nicely that turned out. Even the Brits, who've never been squeamish about shooting up and invading other countries, are not on board with the lawless Obama administration on this one. Masters of saying one thing and doing another, the President and Secretary of State are savvy enough to mumble that only a political solution, not a military one, will stick in Syria. Although a rain of cruise missiles and drone bombs can kneecap the Syrian armed forces, which seem to be holding their own now against U.S. and Saudi-sponsored fighters, it can only make peace talks less and less likely. And since the U.S. really doesn't trust its own Saudi-sponsored thugs to actually run a Syrian government, in the unlikely event the Syrian people would allow it, so what many believe the U.S. prefers is a permanent state of low-grade civil war in Syria, with neither side winning. President Obama may want to turn Syria into Somalia, where since the U.S. cannot install the regime it wants, it has prevented any central government from functioning since the landing of U.S. Marines in a so-called humanitarian intervention during the final minutes of the first Bush administration. For the last 20 years, more than 1 million Somalis, 1 out of 10, have died of hunger and violence, while U.S.-sponsored warlords and U.S.-sponsored invading armies from Ethiopia and Kenya have swept across the landscape. There's no Somali government to build schools or hospitals, to hire teachers or doctors, to run or repair electric grids, waterworks, agricultural or public health programs, so none of these things exist. Somali civilians are barefoot, sick, hungry, and afraid, cowering under a rain of drone bombs. Somalia's only products are refugees and misery, and the country's only industry is its permanent war, an excuse for the U.S. and its client thugs never to leave, ever. That's what President Obama may mean by a political solution for Syria. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Bruce Dixon. Find us on the web at www.blackagendareport.com.
A tantalizing point by Bruce Dixon. Is chaos and the absence of a strong government, in fact, what the U.S. wants in Syria? That sure was at least the result of many other regime changes the U.S. has caused, in Somalia, Iraq, and Libya, to name three. Eric Margolis has a different take on our coming aggression towards Syria. First of all, he says, the attack has nothing to do with chemical weapons or protecting the Syrian population. It has everything to do with increasing our control over the Middle East and increasing Israel's control. It's a war against an obstacle to that control. No, not Syria, Iran. This is a proxy war against Iran, says Margolis. Furthermore, to Margolis, there's nothing new here. It's just old-fashioned imperialism. And he draws a surprising historical parallel. The Second Opium War of 1857. Remember that? This is published in Common Dreams, September 8. I've condensed it a bit for radio. It's called Syria, March to Disaster. Recalling the massacres and destruction during the 1820s Greek War of Independence, Victor Hugo wrote, "All is in ruins and mourning." Today, the nations in ruins and mourning are Iraq, Sudan, Afghanistan, and Libya, all dismembered by the power of the mighty American Raj. Apparently, Syria is the next target of the American imperial bulldozer. After 2 years of brutal rebellion that has been armed and financed by the U.S. and its allies, Syria now faces devastation. A U.S. campaign of airstrikes and missiles will crush Syria's air force, tanks, artillery, and communications. Israel stands ready to sweep up the ruins of Syria. Shamelessly stealing Bush administration propaganda, the Obama White House has been claiming that Syria's chemical weapons pose a dire threat to the United States. In fact, Syria acquired chemical weapons to counter Israel's large arsenal of nuclear weapons. President Obama warns that failure to act will be another Munich appeasement. But the U.S. Congress could not act because it was still on summer vacation. But Obama said there was no urgency. He said the important thing was that America's credibility was at stake. Politicians invoke credibility as an excuse after they have made a huge blunder. In this case, Obama's foolish red lines in Syria that boxed him into a corner of his own making. What we are seeing is the 21st century version of colonialism and imperialism, with a touch of crusader zeal thrown in. The euphemism they use is humanitarian intervention. But Syria is not about poison gas or human rights. It is a proxy war against Syria's ally, Iran. Iran is the only nation now challenging the U.S. and Israel's total military domination of the Mideast. In 1857, a baker in Hong Kong tried to poison the British trade superintendent. Parliament voted for war against China. France joined Britain, citing the killing of a French missionary in China. Russia and the U.S. joined in. The Second Opium War had begun. China was quickly defeated by the Western powers and forced to open its ports to their commerce. China was forced to begin consuming highly addictive opium grown in British India. Sidebar comment, let me run through that again. England's corporations wanted to make money by exporting opium from British India to China. China refused to allow the dope into its country. So England, the United States, France, and Russia went to war against China, invaded China, won the war, and forced China to admit British opium. And, of course, they stole a bunch of stuff while they were there, including the island of Hong Kong, and they forced China to pay reparations to them for their trouble. So much for the war on drugs. Back to the text. Eric Margolis continues, "We should look at events in Syria in this historical light rather than all the indignation over chemical weapons. Besides, we do not know who made the poison gas, and we do not know who used it. Far more important, the U.S. Congress has become seriously corrupted by special interest money, And that's putting it gently. How else did all the Wall Street bankers escape punishment for their egregious financial frauds and theft? Now, other wealthy special interests in America are beating the war drums and pulling the strings of their legislators. Israel is pushing the U.S. hard to destroy its old foe, Syria, which would remove the last Arab state capable of offering even modest military resistance to Israel. So it seems likely that Congress will approve a limited, quote-unquote, war. But remember Mission Creep from Vietnam days? And who will rule Syria after President Bashar Assad is deposed or killed? Iraq, Libya, and Afghanistan hardly offer promising examples of the kind of democracy that Washington's bombs bring. I'd wager that most members of the U.S. Congress could not find Syria on a map. And polls show that ordinary taxpaying Americans are totally against yet another jolly little war that has no sense to it, no exit strategy, and that offers only mayhem and confusion. But the U.S. chariot of the juggernaut just keeps rolling along. So writes Eric Margolis with his essay, Syria, March to Disaster. Which reminds me of another march that did not end well.
It was back in 1942, I was a member of a good platoon. We were on maneuvers in Louisiana one night by the light of the moon. The captain told us to ford a river, that's how it all begun. We were knee-deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, are you sure this is the best way back to the base? Sergeant, go on, I forded this river about a mile above this place. It'll be a little soggy, but just keep slogging, we'll soon be on dry ground. We were waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, the sergeant said, sir, with all this equipment, no man will be able to swim. Sergeant, don't be nervous, Nelly, the captain said to him. All we need is a little determination, men follow me, I'll lead on. We were neck deep in the big muddy, the big fool said to push on. Well, all at once the moon clouded over, we heard a gurgling cry. A few seconds later the captain's helmet was all that floated by. The sergeant said, turn around men, I'm in charge from now on. And we just made it out of the big muddy with the captain dead and gone. We stripped and dived and found his body stuck in the old quicksand. I guess he didn't know that the water was deeper than the place he'd once before been. Another stream had joined the big muddy about a half mile from where we'd gone. We were lucky to escape from the big muddy when the big fools had to push on. I'm not going to point any moral, I'll leave that for yourself. Maybe you're still walking, you're still talking, you'd like to keep your health. But every time I read the paper, them old feelings come on. We're waist deep in the big muddy, the big fool says to push on. Waist deep, neck deep, soon even a tall man will be over his head. Where? Waist deep, big muddy, the big fool says to push on.
Words for Our Time by Pete Seeger. And finally, a few words from law professor and international law expert Marjorie Cohn. She explains that any attack on Syria would be highly illegal under customary international law and also under United States law. Seems to me that calling a U.S. bombing of Damascus illegal is to put it way too mildly. You don't hear the word abomination used much these days, except by Christian right-wingers denouncing gay marriage. I think the word abomination applies better to incinerating innocent people because you prefer a change of government in their country. But abominations aside, attacking Syria would comprise multiple serious crimes under U.S. law. And if we have a president that's above the law, we don't have a president, do we? We have a king. Those are my words, not Marjorie Cohn's. So, let's listen to her words.
An attack on Syria would violate international law. There's no way around it. It would violate the UN Charter, which mandates that countries settle their disputes peacefully. It makes it illegal for any country to use force or threaten to use force against another country. It prohibits intervention in any internal or domestic dispute in another country. The only time the UN Charter allows the use of military force is when the Security Council approves it, and it certainly has not done that here, or in self-defense. And certainly Syria has not attacked the United States or France or any other country, and this would not constitute self-defense. The hypocrisy of it when Obama says, well, there's a red line, and you know, that once they cross that red line, assuming that Assad even used the chemical weapons, and the State Department has admitted they don't know who used them. It could be the opposition, even though the opposition is not united at all. And we don't know. In fact, the Carla Del Ponte from the UN documented that opposition forces used gas a few months ago. So we don't know who it is. But even assuming we know who it is, it's hypocritical for the United States to be complaining about this. First of all, when Obama is killing people with drones, suspected militants, lots of civilians, no trial, just killing them, as if it's worse to kill people with chemicals than with drones. And also, if you look at the United States history of using chemical agents and supporting countries that use chemical agents, for example, supporting Saddam Hussein when he was using chemical weapons against Iran, according to Foreign Policy, again, not a radical publication, Foreign Policy said the United States applied a cold calculus three decades ago to Hussein's widespread use of chemical weapons against his enemies and his own people. The Reagan administration decided that it was better to let the attacks continue if they might turn the tide of the war, and even if they were discovered, the CIA wagered that international outrage and condemnation would be muted. In addition, the United States used cluster bombs, depleted uranium and white phosphorus gas in Iraq and Afghanistan. Cluster bomb canisters have tiny bomblets which spread over a large area. Sometimes they don't explode, and they're picked up by children because they look like Coke cans, and they explode and kill them or seriously injure them. Depleted uranium weapons spread radiation over vast areas of land. And in Iraq, there's been a sharp increase in leukemia and birth defects, probably from depleted uranium. White phosphorus gas burns to the bone. And we use that in Iraq and Afghanistan. Highly illegal. Also, in the Puerto Rican island of Vieques, which the United States has militarily occupied most of that land for 60 years, the U.S. Navy practiced with Agent Orange. And Agent Orange we used in Vietnam. Agent Orange contains dioxin, the most dangerous chemical known to science, and still Vietnamese people are being born with birth defects from exposure of their ancestors to Agent Orange. U.S. veterans are still dying of diseases related to Agent Orange. And yet in Vieques we used Agent Orange, napalm, uranium. We used napalm in Vietnam. There's that iconic photo of the young girl naked running from having just been covered with napalm, you know, which was manufactured by Dow Chemical, which melts the skin. It burns the skin. And so when you think about the hypocrisy involved of the United States, I should say Obama, because Congress certainly has not supported what he's doing, and looks like he doesn't even intend to go to Congress. And by the way, even if Congress did say okay, it would still be illegal as violative of the UN Charter and of customary international law. You cannot conduct an aggressive war in another country And it's the highest form of customary international law. It's called jus cogens. It's a prohibition that's so strong that things like slavery and torture and wars of aggression cannot be mounted by people, even if they haven't signed treaties outlawing those things, because the entire world community has said they're absolutely unacceptable. So just for so many reasons, this would be illegal. It would be hypocritical. It could lead to a widening of a regional war in the Middle East, and it's opposed by most Americans. It's opposed by people in the Arab world. In the New York Times, they cited polls that show the vast majority of Arabs across the region view any action by the United States in particular as motivated by its own interest or Israel's, no matter the context, perhaps because of the history of colonialism. So there's no good that can come out of fanning the flames of a tinderbox of a civil war that is already, it's already tragic. And when John Kerry talks about moral obscenity, Hans Blix says with 100,000 killed and millions of refugees, the civil war itself is a moral obscenity, but it's not for the U.S. to go in and do what it would really be a symbolic action, although it would kill a number of people, because they aren't trying to stop these chemical weapons. They're not going to be bombing chemical weapons factories. That would spread chemicals all over. It's not even clear what they would be bombing, except that the intent really would be to punish Assad, degrade Assad, because they see Syria as being aligned with Iran, and that Israel sees that as opposed to its own interests.
That's legal scholar Marjorie Cohn, from a recent interview with Michael Slate on The Michael Slate Show. Many thanks for that recording. This show is New World Notes, and once again, I thank you for listening. You'll find links to the uncut versions of everything in our show today. You'll find these links at our own website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. There you'll also find recordings of all our programs, and you are welcome to listen to your heart's content. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust advising illegitimi non carborundum. Please come back next week, and remember, war is not healthy for children and other living things. Ciao.